This next story on KNKX comes from our show Sound Effect. Here's Sound Effect host Jennifer Wing.
You're listening to Sound Effect on 88.5 KNKX. I'm Jennifer Wing, and today our theme is up in the air. And right now I am standing in a gravel parking lot at the Grant County International Airport. It's just outside of Moses Lake. And some University of Washington students are here with their professor, Robert Wingley. He's a professor of atmospheric sciences at the university. And they are in the process of trying to launch what is essentially a 20-foot-long glider. It only weighs about 12 pounds. And it is carrying a small propulsion system. Really, it's about the size of a baseball mitt. And a large balloon is being filled with helium, and that balloon is going to pull this glider and the contraption attached to it and pull it up into the atmosphere, into the upper reaches of the Earth's atmosphere. And if this works, this is the first step in what researchers hope will eventually be possible, which is to have satellites that are stationary in the Earth's atmosphere that can keep an eye on one location, satellites that don't move from their spot, satellites that are powered by solar energy, and they can stay up there indefinitely. So let's talk to Robert Wingley to find out what all of this means and how it could possibly affect your life and mine in the future.
If you actually develop the technology properly, you could develop it so that it just flies around a circle over a particular patch of the Earth, and that's one of the holy grails.
And the satellites that we see on a clear night, on a starry sky, it looks like a star traveling across the dark sky. None of those go in little circles, do they? They all travel.
They all travel. So the ones that you see are what's called in low Earth orbit, and they have a 90-minute orbit around the Earth, so it's the same as a space station, so it's about 90 minutes. So if you're going to watch a patch, then you end up taking photos of it every 90 minutes, and then it moves off to different areas, so it's hard to look at that patch of the Earth. We have geosynchronous satellites that have an orbit that matches the Earth's rotation so that you see a single patch of the Earth all the time, but you're way far away from the Earth, so you don't have the resolution. And then the cost of putting something up there, it's like $10,000 a pound. And once it's up there, and you don't get to change it. So what we're trying to do is develop technology that you could do it routinely, monitor it, could help you do the internet, whatever. And then if you need to update it, you could bring it down, cheap, reload, send it back up. So the whole experiment here that you're going to see today is going to cost us less than $1,000.
That's amazing. Yeah. So theoretically, when something like this actually comes to fruition and becomes mainstream, potentially you could own one of these personally because the cost seems so cheap, and you could monitor your own piece of property from space.
From the edge of space. Yes.
And it would have. And what would the resolution be like?
It depends on what kind of. It could be really high resolution. I mean, some people don't like having high resolution pointing down at them, but there are restrictions and requirements for it.
What other applications? I'm thinking, spying, monitoring war and disaster areas. Yeah. What other?
It's really for remote sensing and however you want to use remote sensing. And I should say that this effort here is actually sponsored by Amazon Catalyst. That working through the University of Washington.
But remote sensing, what possibilities, this is your world, what possibilities do you see? What menu? The menu I see is probably limited compared to the one that you see in terms of applications.
Okay, so there's two things. Communications is one of my pet things, and I've been working with students in rural areas, and communications is actually not as great as they claim it is. So when you see those pictures of the great coverage that this telephone company providing, if you actually stopped and still framed it, you'd see huge gaps across the rural areas of US that aren't really covered by these phone networks. And if you go to the poorer nations, it's a lot worse than that. So trying to solve that communications and bringing everybody up to the same kind of technological era is a pet ambition of mine. From the remote sensing, there are huge applications. So we're in a very tumultuous political time, but global warming is happening. And I can use the word not just global change, but global warming. You see the glaciers retreating. These things could be used to really monitor and quantify exactly what's going on at a really high resolution that than we presently have. And so you can actually see the devastation that that's occurring presently. So they're the two pet things that I'd like to see happen.
What are the nefarious uses of this?
Well, the nefarious, of course, is the military applications. And, you know, I'm not going to go that way, okay? We're just a bunch of scientists and how you guys use it.
Yeah.
By the time everything is ready to launch, the UW students have spent more than 2 hours in this parking lot working at a table, piecing the glider and its payload together. And now that it's time to lift this thing into the air, another teacher shouts out some helpful advice.
If things go horribly wrong, be ready to get out of the way or take cover. Do not try to help by grabbing anything. Just get out of the way.
The huge balloon lifts the glider up into the sky. It takes 2 tries, but it finally works.
So that's our launch.
So it's a success.
Yeah, it's off in the air.
What Robert and his students are really testing today is whether the propulsion system attached to the glider will work. Nothing like it exists. This is what could make a stationary satellite possible. It's the super lightweight plastic contraption the size of a baseball mitt that sits on the glider where a small cockpit would be. UW grad student Paige Northway says more than 100 batteries the size of pennies will be the power supply. The hope is the batteries will generate hundreds of sparks that will pulse the glider forward.
So we have energy stored on the batteries. We transfer that energy to a set of capacitors, which has like a just a controlled spot for that energy to be stored, and then we short that energy through the air. So it's like you shuffle your feet along the carpet and shock someone. That's essentially what's happening, but it's happening with a lot of energy instead of a little static energy.
Yeah.
And so that's how it works.
And it's that energy that will make it turn around in a circle, hopefully.
So that
below.
Energy pushes the air out, and that air pushing the thing forward is what causes, with the design of the plane, will cause it to go around in a circle.
Yeah. And there it is. Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's cool. Nice.
It's beautiful.
Awesome.
It's just sitting above a big white series of clouds.
Are you guys going to put your
It's going up.
In the end, the glider stayed up for about an hour before falling back down to Earth, which was the plan. But unfortunately, it landed in a very remote area along the Snake River. Robert and his students are going to try and recover it next week and are anxious to review the data. Robert says that the basic science of what he and his students do is pretty well known, but when you're trying to do something brand new like this, bits of knowledge are like pieces in a jigsaw puzzle. It's easy to identify what individual pieces look like, but it's a real skill set to be able to put one puzzle piece together with another piece to make something that's completely unique and useful. He says when that happens, you create something that is quite spectacular.